Welcome to the LTW Fancast with me, Jacob Basford.
And me, Jess Bunyard. Hello from what is an incredibly chilly and snowy Yorkshire, because I remember last week I was grumpy that it hadn't snowed. Now I'm sort of grumpy that it's snowed. Well, I'm not grumpy that I'm snowed, but I am grumpy that it's frozen, because we are recording this section of the pod at the very least on a Tuesday afternoon, Tuesday evening, when normally I would be at the club coaching. But sadly, our grass pitches are frozen. And this afternoon, when the groundsman sent the message out, it looked like the 3G was going to freeze later on in the afternoon as well. And something I learned today is when a 3G freezes, certainly ours, it's got a rubber crumb, and apparently the rubber crumb bits freeze together and get really dangerous. So yeah, we're not training tonight, but probably a shout out to all the grounds people working hard to make sure pitches are playable. It's I'm grumpy because we're not training because it's frozen, but it's out of anyone's control. But the poor old groundsman at my rugby club has to go and check it in the cold and the frost and the snow and the rain and the wind, whenever it is, to check pitches are playable and look after them. Nonetheless, I'm recording the pod with Jacob. I shall stop rambling now about frozen pitches and the grumpiness of me not out there coaching. Jacob, how are you? Your weekend was exciting because you were at the La Rochelle game. Do you want to talk about that? I'm not too disheartened about it, actually. I'm really not about the men's La Rochelle score, especially not after seeing what happened to Sarries in the game afterwards. But how was your weekend? How was the trip over? How was all that stuff?
Yeah, thank you very much, Jess. I mean, yeah, I'll just quickly say that it is cold in York. We've had an absolute pittance of a snowfall. It seems that just York's not really the place for it to snow. But yeah, I had an absolutely class weekend out in La Rochelle. I mean, it was really an incredible. It's a lovely place, and you know, quick shout out to the Hinckley gentlemen on tour for organizing a great trip with the lads and dads. Yeah, it was really, really good fun. Lots of beer was consumed, lots of franglais of communicating with the very, very nice La Rochelle supporters. So yeah, it was great. I mean, Jess got a little bit jealous because I tweeted a photo with Dan Cole
I got very jealous. I was like, met Dan, you've actually got him to stay still in a photo and pose for a photo. I'm fine.
To be fair though, Jess, I didn't like go into too deep conversation, because I was like, well, I don't want to, you know, obviously the player's got to be focused. I didn't want to make you too jealous that I just had a conversation with Dan Cole about scrums. But that was very, very cool. And yeah, so we were on sort of the official supporters package, or at least myself, my cousin, my uncle, and a mate of my uncle. And we met up with everyone else who had sort of flown or got the train in on Friday night. But yeah, it was really, really good fun. I mean, it all kind of, we were on this flight with the players. So yeah, then it happened. It was quite weird that we were supposed to fly directly to La Rochelle, but then there was this. What happened was that we had to get diverted to Nantes Airport, because they had to close down the La Rochelle Airport because they had this sort of like emergency landing take place. So then that meant that we all had to get a coach down from the airport to La Rochelle, which is about an hour and 45. But shout out to the touring company. They all got that very quickly sorted. It was all free of charge and whatnot. So yeah, so it was really, really good fun. We were all decked out in berets, which was really, really funny. And yeah, it was just an incredible, incredible atmosphere. I think, you know, the CEO of Leicester, Andrea Pitchin, was flying out with all of us. And I do actually really hope that she took some notes down, and the coaches took some notes down of of how La Rochelle does the atmosphere and stuff. It is incredible. Not saying that the atmosphere at Mattery Woods Welford Road is not very good. It is very good, but it could be a lot better. And I do sort of please the club that don't put a lot of effort into trying making the atmosphere a lot more bigger at Mattery Woods Welford Road. To be fair, a lot of the fans are starting to pick up the chant that the teams do when they win. I know who and what I am. I'm a Mighty Tigers man chant. Like, a lot of fans were singing that as well. So that's starting to sort of disseminate in amongst the fan base. So it'd be nice to see if perhaps that sort of chanted about a lot more. But yeah, don't listen to the old fart on the forum that complains that we're doing like football less chants. Don't give them any sort of any time. The future, I think, is going to be more sort of like, I think the future is definitely more sort of having a lot more songs and stuff, and that's what La Rochelle did. And yeah, it was great. We had this family behind us who are La Rochelle supporters, and this little lad and this little girl sort of like chanting Will Skelton, which was incredible. But yeah, no, I definitely think that I definitely think that the result was contextualized by the Saracens' results to Bordeaux. And yeah, actually, what was quite interesting, I thought there was a lot of comparisons between how the men played on Sunday with actually how the women played, which we'll get into in a bit. But yeah, that was quite a long-winded answer, Jess. But yeah, no, it was really, really good fun. So shout out to my uncle and my dad for sort of sorting that out for me as a little Christmas present, first trip abroad. And yeah, it was really, really ace despite the result.
There were parallels that I do want to get into, and I spotted the parallels as I was watching the men's game. But yeah, so before we get any further, because we do want to leap into that Bristol game. There's some bits I think we have to tackle, acknowledge, and then maybe contextualize, just as I imagine our counterparts on the Rolling Wall will be doing the same about tackling and contextualizing the La Rochelle fixture. So we're going to review the Bristol game. I'm going to go through some news, which is kind of all kicked off today. It's been anything but a slow news day in rugby world. We're also delighted to be joined by commentator extraordinaire Nick Heath. We're going to chat about the Tigers versus Bristol game, as he commented on the game for TNT, as well as a certain anniversary of the England winning the World Cup in 2014 coming up, and what he makes of that Lions tour news. Then we've got a player profile. We're going to look at Leah Bartlett. And actually, on the player profile, I need to issue an update, an apology to Talia Brodie. Because she has way more caps than I credited for last week's pod. I said she only got one against Spain. She's only, when they went to play them in Madrid, but it turns out she's played, I think, for every WXV game that the USA played. So I do apologize. Like, she has far more caps than just the one cap against Spain. I thought about this and I was like, well, I did look, genuinely look on. I don't want anybody to be out there going, Jess Bunyard never does her research. I did look on a couple of websites and they all said she had one cap, which kind of then led me to get a little bit angry that it wasn't the case and that other people hadn't credited her with these caps. And actually, if we were talking about a male player, would the websites be as inaccurate? And then I got kind of really angry about that. And I don't know if that would be the case, if that's the same, but it's certainly an indication that in order to grow our game, we need to have up-to-date facts and websites so that other people can do up-to-date analysis. So that wasn't helpful, but I have now rectified that, so the world out there knows that Brodie certainly has more than one cap. And then after we've done our player profile into Leah Bartlett, we're going to go into the Sale preview and look ahead to that, which is going to be kind of an awesome fixture. So before we crack on with the rest of the pod, starting with that Bristol preview, Jacob, you've got a shout out to shout out about.
Yeah, so on the official Tigers trip was Ethan Clamp, who is better known as Leicester Tigers Memes, the handler of the Instagram account. This is just me shouting out to Ethan. It was great to catch up with you. I know we've conversed a little bit over the years, especially when I was still doing my rugby videos as well. So yeah, it was great to meet you in person, mate. And yeah, it was good time in La Rochelle, and hopefully we'll see each other again soon.
So on to our Bristol review. Actually, I have a shout out. I would like to shout out to PWR because thanks to PWR, I will now have weekly access to all of the PWR stats, which is pretty amazing. They're provided by Opta. So I now have a snazzy kind of breakdown of all the stats from this week on weekly, which is pretty amazing, which will no doubt help us on the pod and be able means we can kind of track Tigers' improvements numerically through the weeks through stats as well. But let's just delve a little bit in the stats of the Bristol game then. It wasn't great. It was better than that Allianz Cup performance. Because we scored tries, I think in the Allianz Cup, we only got 3 points. So it was better. Possession, though, not good.
No.
Still had 63% of the possession. We had 37. That's not good. But a positive, I do want to talk about our defence really, really quickly, because our defence has been something where we've spoken about wanting improvements. And we had to defend for a great chunk of time in the Bristol game. We made 159 successful tackles. That's a large amount to be making. Yeah. And I think for a long, 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 long time, we really, really fronted up in defence. Again, I think parallels to the La Rochelle game, where both Tigers teams fronted up in defence for a long period of time. And then, unfortunately, we're just unable to stem the tide. It just, you know, fatigue got in maybe, you know, a couple of ill-disciplined moments and both La Rochelle and Bristol are capable of sneaking through and of scoring tries, of powering over and, you know, and bringing little Holly Aitchison, chip and chase type things on. Beautiful, beautiful scores. But our defence was better against Bristol for large parts of the game. I think certainly that first quarter, if I'm remembering right, because I watched it live, you just finished watching the replay, we were really fronting up in defence and we made some last gasp tackles. I think it was Fran who made a tackle and kind of knocked the ball out of somebody's hand and made this try-saving, amazing tackle. So we're really starting to front up in defence and we're starting to switch on from the very start. It just, Bristol never stopped hammering at our door. And because of that, we could never quite get the possession to go forward. That's what it felt like. But our defence has improved massively. I know some people may look at 50 points scored in this game and 50 points scored in the Allianz Cup game and go, well, tell me, Jessar, how has our defence improved? Because we've conceded the same amount of scores, but Bristol did have a heavy amount of WXV contingent away when we played them in the Allianz Cup. I know we did too, but they didn't have Holly Aitchison for starters, or Sarah Byrne, who sadly had to go off at the you know, in the first quarter of the fixture, and we wish her well. Because she's exciting to see play week in, week out. We want to see players like Sarah Byrne in the league.
Yeah, so, hopefully from an England perspective, hopefully from an English perspective, we wish our best for Sarah Byrne. Hopefully that's not a long-term injury which affects England in the Six Nations. But yeah, sorry, go on, Jess.
No, you're right, absolutely. So our defence definitely has improved because Bristol brought back a lot of their WXV players. Holly Aitchison got her first score in a Bristol shirt at that game, and she's a Red Rose 10. She's amazing. So, although the scoreline looked very similar from a Bristol attack perspective, the defence for me certainly showed improvements. And we did narrow the scoreline because we scored 12 points of our own. It's not all doom and gloom. It's really, really important to contextualise this. Bristol are top four versus Harlequins and Loughboroughs we've been reviewing in previous weeks. Bristol are top four. They're to be viewed in the same line as and respect, certainly as Saracens. I don't know why they're not higher up in than just top four, to be honest. They've got the quality to do that. They've just been a bit inconsistent, almost like Bristol men have been a bit inconsistent this season. So to contextualize this, it's, again, like Tigers men against La Rochelle, important to contextualize that. And then no doubt they will be doing on the Rolling Mall. Bristol Bears are a top four team with lots and lots and lots of England talent. And for us to have fronted up for so long makes me really proud. Yes, there are definite improvements. I would have liked to seen the scoreline a little narrower, of course, but to front up for so long against a lot of talent is really saying something about the improvements we've made in defence.
Yeah, no, exactly. And yeah, there's a lot of comparisons with that La Rochelle game. I think one that I will like to say is that that scoreline does look tough, but but until sort of the 55, 60th minute, it was a close scoreline. Yes, it was disappointing. We only scored 12 points, but we could have easily scored another two. As I'll discuss later, I'll go on a bit of a Crumburyite bag against some of the officiating, which potentially cost us at least 10 points. Especially when there was that period when Bristol were down to 13 women. Again, another comparison with the La Rochelle game, and the men couldn't exploit that 2 men advantage. We sort of had a similar issue as well, but also, like I said, that it all came from a disallowed try, which we'll talk about in a bit more, that really shouldn't have been disallowed.
Well, let's dig into that a little bit because I don't know how much you got on the match preview around commentary, whether you could hear Nick Heath on the commentary, but we're talking about that pass to Fran. Now, what I will say is the burden that referees have to notice all things at all the time is large. Extremely large. So this is not a criticism of referees, but perhaps a criticism of the way we almost view backwards passes or forwards passes in this game. Because Nick was saying something about some kind of, if you measure two moving players and a pass that goes backwards against a static line on the pitch, it will appear forwards when it's not, because you're viewing like three moving objects against a static line. This is where we're probably going into physics. Physics is not my strong suit, but that's what Nick, I think, tried to explain on the commentary. So I think maybe therefore we need, a review as a rugby population as a whole of maybe how we view forwards and backwards passes, that we don't judge them against that solid line on the pitch, because the referee's using every tool he has to referee it, and that is a solid line on the pitch. Unless we, prove it and video it and go, actually, and have some sort of, I don't know, I'm calling for a scientific inquiry into whether a pass actually does travel forwards if you perceive it as traveling forwards against a white line when you've got basically three moving objects. I don't know. It appeared okay to me. I wasn't in the crowd watching it because I had a terrible hacking cough. So I was at home. I was watching it on the telly. I'm viewing it from a camera angle that isn't dead on with the pass. It's not dead on aligned with the pitch. So that skews my camera angle. That skews my perception of things. I'm also heavily, heavily biased because I'm a Leicester Tigers supporter. But it did appear flat. It appeared an okay pass. But again, the referee's judging it with that line on the pitch, and they can only judge it with the information that they're given. Now, if they're being told it's fine, judge it on the line of the pitch, and actually, maybe we need some kind of evidence to go, actually, physically, scientifically, I don't know, I could be talking out my ass here, but it shows on camera scientifically that that's not the accurate way to measure things. Until then, referees have got to make a, 10-second judgment call, really, with pressure to speed up the game from the TMO and, speed up things. World Rugby directives have got to speed up the game. The TMO can view it on a only on so many camera angles, and they're all slightly skewed as well. But until if what Nick Heath is saying is true, and I have no clue because I'm not a scientist, then referees are only going to measure things on that white line, which makes it really, really difficult to be a referee in that moment. I don't know where I'm going with this. I've sort of tailed off the point that I was trying to make, but I think it's difficult. It's really difficult. Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it?
I think it's just a shame because it's a great score. It's great,
Yes.
when and when fans see that score and they see, okay, so Bristol Bears went down to 13 women, but we didn't exploit that. We did. It was some great passes from Natasha Jones to Meg, and it was a really accurate pass. Fran takes it at, it's not behind her, it's not too much in front of her. She uses her gas to get round. It's a superb score. I think we are potentially in danger of becoming the Fran McGee fan cast, but I think we do have to give another
We're not ashamed at that. I think I tweeted at the time, that's probably like I put out a tweet going, if you want your top Tiger time to still be that disallowed try, because it was amazing, we'll allow that because it was. Regardless of that score, and here's another parallel for me between Tigers women and Tigers men this weekend. I felt we snatched or tried to snatch it a few opportunities when there was that double yellow card period. I felt the same when the men were playing La Rochelle. There's always a, oh my gosh, there's got to be space. So let's find the space really fast. And there was a couple of moments, whether it was in the double yellow card period or earlier, where we gave Fran the ball, maybe I think a little bit too early. We almost gave her a bit too much to do. And I think it's because we were kind of a giddy at the space and snatching at the space. And I'm maybe calling for scientific inquiries. I'd like another exploration into the mental resilience of a team that has a yellow card, just one, two yellow cards, and a red card. Because there's something that happens, I think, to teams that have two yellow cards or a red card where it sort of brings them together and they're harder to score against than a team that just has one yellow card. There's something unifying in that. Oh gosh, it's hit the fan. Two yellow cards or a red card. We'll bond together. We'll defend really tightly. We'll become really hard to score against versus that. All we have to do is survive this 10 minutes. So it felt to me like we snatched at the space, tried to snatch at it, but also credit to Bristol who really, really, really responded during that two yellow card period. And again,
100%.
I feel there's something unifying that happens within a team that gets either a red card or two yellow cards that is different versus a single yellow card. And it's just something a bit more solidifying.
Yeah, and it's also from a Tigers perspective, it's kind of like we have got 7 minutes of this yellow card and then 10 minutes of the other yellow card. We've got to exploit the space. So I definitely agree, but I would actually argue that the women actually were exploiting the space and the passes were a lot more cohesive than the men, which is again makes me really frustrated that that try was disallowed when it, in all likelihood it probably shouldn't. But yeah, I mean Fran was just terrific again. Obviously if you've not seen on Twitter, do have a look at that try saving tackle as well because that was fantastic. And she was really unlucky in the last play of the game. She, it was a lovely move, lovely switch play off the scrum. And in the 80th minute, she still got the pace to sort of get round that covering Bears winger defender, and is very, very unlucky not to get the dot down on the chip and trace. But another fantastic game from Fran McGee. And on the other wing, we had Amelia Tutt, Welsh international, on her first start, and I thought she had a really good game as well. I don't know what your thoughts on that, Jess. I thought she was really solid.
Yeah, it was really nice to see a little bit of rotation again. Probably where Tigers women are mirroring Tigers men, or Tigers men are mirroring Tigers women at the weekend, because both sides featured a bit of rotation of players. And this is something I'm really, really passionate about. Yes, you want to play best people in best positions, absolutely. But for the development of a team and for a team plan or a club plan that is about more than just winning next week's game or about winning the next five games, you have to have development of your squad, competition for places, and rotation of players. And that includes for player welfare, which is something I'm really, really passionate about. So it was really nice to see a rotation of people throughout both fixtures at the weekend. Some people on the bench, some people like not playing, some people rested. It was really, really exciting because we got to see different faces, like Tut, who I think has returned from injury. I'm not sure on that. Like Kaz Colley, seeing her play. We got to see a few more minutes, I
Right.
think, with Churchy Knight on the pitch as well, who we interviewed last week. So it was really pleasing to see her there. So it's pleasing to see a rotation of players, because if the coaches talk about this being more than just a 1 year, one season plan, it has to be in order for it to be sustainable. Then that must absolutely feature rotation of players and players getting the right game time for them.
Yeah, no, shout out to Roisin McBryan on her return to injury as well in the back row from a broken hand. You know, she was sort of a busybody alongside Morgan Richardson. So shout out to her as well. Yeah, I think Amelia Tutt looked dangerous on the right wing, but I don't know about the listeners, but I actually wonder if her future is more actually in the centres, because she's got power and she's got pace. And I do wonder if that might be a bit more suited to outside centre than on the right wing. But no, really, really solid first start from her. So definitely another name to look out for the future. And yeah, again, I think Churchy Knight was really, really impactful. And that actually brings me to another refereeing decision, where she did this fabulous chicken wing offload that set I think Natasha Jones down the touchline to dot down, and the ref calls that forward, which was the
I think that was forward. I'm gonna cut through. I'm gonna disagree. We're gonna get into a full-blown argument. I think that one was forward, I have to say.
ooh,
No, no, I no, I no, I'm removing the bias hat here. I think that one, and I think if you look at the flick of her hand, I think she also flicked it forward. So I think that one, it's going to be a pod where we just constantly disagree this week. I think that one for me went forward. I'm not,
That's no, that's fair. But I think what we can perhaps both appreciate was the ambition to get that offload away and to exploit
100%.
the space on the right. It was completely the right thing, and it was really good execution of skill set, aside from maybe that the offload was forward. I didn't personally think it was, but obviously, you know, it's one of those things. I think it's probably one of those things, if the Bears player had done that, I probably would have called that forward.
I think, but also, like, I again, we have to come back to the ambition to want to try offloads. If you don't try offloads in a cold match in January, then you're probably not going to try them and succeed at them when it's warm in April, May. You have to practice these things and play like that all year round. You don't suddenly go, right, spring, summer, guys, let's do offloads. It doesn't work like that. You don't develop your attacking principles like that. So I was really pleased that somebody that is as young as Churchy is having the confidence to try that sort of stuff. And yeah, it didn't come off, but next time it might, or the time after that, and it's going to be glorious, and it'll probably be nominated for Try of the Week or like a Skill of the Week from PWR because of that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There are, yes, Lots of positives, I think, in our intent to play from the Bristol game, but it wouldn't be a review from us if we didn't talk about scrums. Scrums for me are a bit of an interesting conversation this week because we are clearly making improvements. We've said that before on previous weeks. Pods, our ability to now sustain pressure. Now we need to work at going forward and supporting the hooker so that she feels able to lift up her foot and strike the ball. I had issues with our scrums in the first half. I don't think we did ourselves any favours about how, where. I don't know if this was a miscommunication between nine and hooker. I only played hooker for about 20 minutes in one game and hated it. So I didn't like it at all, and I've never played nine, for which most of my teammates were probably thankful for. But I think there was probably a miscommunication between nine and two in where the hooker almost wanted the ball, because I think we were trying to get our feed in and out the back quickly because we were aware we got the likes of Sarah Byrne putting pressure on our scrum. So we'd probably spoken about that, and I just think there was a bit of miscommunication around the put in of the ball, which again, the more these players play together and they try things out, the less of these issues we're going to have. But I just think we had a scrum put in issue that made our scrums look a little bit worse in the first half than they actually were. I think we were trying a really like almost shallow put in, and it wasn't going in the scrum, but it was sort of half going in, and then the scrum was happening. So I think that was because we were trying to get the scrum, trying to get the ball in and out, quick play. Let's load the backs. Let's go. We know we quite haven't got go forward on the scrum yet. So ball out. Let's play. Let's give it to the backs. Let's have some space. Let's use our pace. Got Magic Meg, we've got Fran, we've got Tash, all of this speed we've got out wide. So I think it was in an effort to get the ball out quickly, but it just didn't quite work for us this week. But I come back to the point about saying about the offloads, you have to try these things. Now you don't just, 10 weeks into a campaign, it doesn't just suddenly materialize out of nowhere. You have to work on these things. And I think that's a sign of us trying to work on things and put in some stuff in place that makes things better suited for where we are right now. Obviously, when we've got a dominant scrum, we can then just add that on top, like the beautiful cherry on top of the cake that it will be. So I think it was a symptom of us trying to get the ball out quickly and out to the pace that happened. But that's my thoughts on the scrum. Jacob, you've watched the replay today. You got any thoughts on top of that?
I can definitely see why you think that. I think a lot of that was down to potentially either the scrum half or maybe Ellis Martin panicking because of all the pressure that was coming in from the scrum. And I mean, even when Sarah Byrne went off after 5 minutes, that pressure in the scrum didn't really change until we brought on Fuzz, a replacement tight head, and then had Tanya Bird in the back row as well. That's when the scrum was stabilizing a lot more, and you could see and you could tell that because Bristol were then actually trying to wheel it. We did get a couple of calls and got a couple of scrum penalties from that work. So yeah, I think not having Sangapolu, sorry, in the back row hurt us today. Yesterday hurt us on Saturday in the scrum. And I think the light powered nature of our back five was exposed by that unfortunately, which Bristol were able to do. Because I mean, like we were talking about earlier with the defence, our defence was really solid. We were putting Bristol under a lot of pressure, and they were making mistakes, they were making knock-ons. But because we couldn't we didn't have a secure enough platform in the scrum, we couldn't exploit that enough, unfortunately. And I think that's going to be a frustration for the girls, that their defensive work wasn't they weren't able to get the rewards that they should have from their work in defence. So that's something that will that hopefully they can work on going forward. But yeah, I think you know, I think you're right. I think there was a bit of potentially a bit of miscommunication between the twos and between Ellis Martin and the scrum half. And like I said, that's going to come with time. And I think especially, you know, there is that fear factor, you know, especially when you're playing, if you're playing Sarah Byrne for the first time, if you're, you know, if you're Leah Bar, I don't Leah Bar probably has played against Sarah Byrne before, but you know, I definitely think there's potentially that fear factor as well. And you need to sort of like play the players a couple of times against top quality competition in the PWR for sort of that fear factor to kind of go away a little bit. But yeah, I think scrums were yeah, it was a shame we didn't go as well as what we did a little bit against Harlequins, but I'm sure going forward it will get better. And I think, yeah, we were just undone slightly by being a bit, you know, we're a little bit bare bones in the back five with what we assume is injuries to Eva Donaldson and Katha Jacobs and Sangapolu, or whether they were just rested. But even so, I think that kind of highlights the perhaps the difference in experience between the two squads. And unfortunately, in order to build that experience, we're going to have to expose our entire squad to the PWR, and you will get mismatches like what happened on Saturday. So that's you know, we're just going to have to bite that bullet for now. And it is tough because we're Tigers fans, and we expect it to be dominant in all areas of the set piece, and of course we expect high standards of all our teams, and we should continue to do so. But I think for the time being, we are going to have to. It's a difficult thing to chew, but we do have to do that going forward. I don't know what your any more thoughts on that, Jess?
Yeah, absolutely. You have to expose players to this type of environment. You can't wrap players in cotton wool to a certain extent. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. You have to play players at the right time. You can't push anyone out of their comfort zone too much. You have to sort of be in this level of learning where you're like sort of comfortably uncomfortable in that, and no one's pushed into a psychologically unsafe or dangerous zone, and nobody was when we played Bristol. But you have to push people out of their comfort zone a little bit to learn. And I think this was definitely a big week where we could say, looking back on the previous weeks, we've made vast, vast improvements. And this week was a test. It was another chance to learn. And now we can take all those learnings and keep and propel ourselves forward. Because now we've exposed a larger number of our squad to more game time, to a team that's in the top four, and look at everything they will have learned and taken away from that experience. They will have learned masses amount. That's apparently my phone telling me that I should vote for the men's premiership thing. I don't know. If you heard what that ping was, that was the Gallagher men's prem app reminding me to vote on something that I haven't a clue what that was. Where's my PWR app? That's what I want to know. Moving on. But yeah, I do think this is a massive learning environment for the team this year. And the more we immerse players and make sure that they're getting game time in the right way so that it's not psychologically unsafe, but they're still learning and being pushed out of their comfort zone, the better that will be in the long run. And it's something I want to talk about in the player profile, but I'm going to deviate for a second and go. We interviewed Churchy Knight last week. She's so young. She's a young member of this squad, and she was saying how she's relying and asking questions and learning from other people. Her experience doesn't just in the Bristol Bears game doesn't just serve us for this season. It probably serves us for the next 5 seasons as a squad, as a team. And I think that's really the way to look at some of these games. We can
100%,
review a
100%.
one-off fixture here and there, absolutely. And I can look at the stats and be critical, and we can give the praise and we can go, ah, yes, this required improvement. But it's when we say these things, it's not just about improvement for this year. Players like Churchy Knight will carry this experience with her. and it will help her improve and form who she is as a player for the next 5 years as
Yeah.
a Tigers player, undoubtedly. And that's, I think, what Vicky McQueen talks about. It's not just this year, and it's not just next season or the season after that. It's the next 5 to 10 seasons as a team that is wanting to compete at the very top level in this country, in one of the best domestic leagues in the world. And so, in order for us to for that to be the case, we have to have games like these where there's squad rotation, people play. Yes, the result doesn't go our way, but we try things and we learn loads. We learn loads. And speaking to Church Unite last week and hearing about the team culture that is chaotic and fun, and she's allowed to ask questions and she can ask questions of whoever she wants, and she's allowed to learn and take moments for herself, and all of that means that it's the type of environment that will support players to develop so that games like these are not just games to be forgotten, they're games to be remembered, learnt, and developed from. And that's why when we review these things, I think that's, and when we watch them as fans, it's really, really important to give that context.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do implore listeners to watch the full match replay on YouTube, because it gives you that better sense of where we are as a team. I know that scoreline does look a bit nasty, and it's tough. It can be deflating. I'm sure it's deflating for the players, but it's really, really important for the long, long long term future of this club. We could have just gone all out. We could have signed all these amazing players and have all that experience. But if they leave in 2 years' time, and we've spent far too much money on that, then our long-term future of the club is at risk. I definitely agree with all that. I think, we've got to have the painful lessons now, and it will pay dividends. It might not pay dividends at the end of this season. It might take a while for next season, but it will pay dividends for the future of Leicester Tigers women's rugby.
Yeah, absolutely. Ollie Chessam, George Martin, two men's players getting a huge amount of credit at the moment from TNT Sports and commentators and writers and all sorts. They don't just emerge as top international players playing for England overnight. They have to have development. And so imagine that, but for like 80% of this Tiger squad. And therefore, imagine the possibility in seasons to come, not just the improvements we're making now, because we're making so many. This is a team that fronted up against Bristol for the first quarter. This is the team that forced Saracens to press the Marley Packer button. This is the team that almost beat Loughborough. This is the team that almost beat Quins. And that's in our first season. Then add all of those learning experiences into the melting pot with good coaches, a good culture, a good environment, and it starts to get really, really exciting. And I start to get very overexcited.
Yeah, same. And with a lot of Tigers fight as well. It doesn't quite, if you watch the highlights, it doesn't quite show it, because Fran McGee was unable to dot down that try. But from our we made a break from inside our own half, and that's because we were in the last play of the game. We were still fighting to do our club proud, and these girls are doing the shirt and the club proud. And I think we do have to emphasize that there is improvements. Our breakdown discipline was massive, massive improvement from the week before. Quins were all over us in the breakdown. They were getting lots of opportunities from that. I think probably in the entirety of the Bristol game, I think we gave away two, not much more than that. So,
I mean,
again.
let's chat about overall penalties, because I don't know what the stat was that I reeled off last week, but it was well over 10 penalties we conceded in the previous
13, I think, if I'm not
13.
mistaken. Yeah.
This week we conceded 8 and Bristol conceded 13 penalties. So our penalty count is way, way down than it was the previous week. And I think that's, again, immediate reflections from that ruck stuff that we spoke about the week before, as you
Yeah.
say. So there's massive, you talk about doing the shirt proud. They absolutely are doing the shirt proud, are doing the club proud. And I don't think we can overstate that. Yeah, I got quite emotional there.
No. And I really, and I really hope that the team are listening to this, and that we
So they
are.
should be. This
No, they should.
this is we're the LTW fan cast, damn it.
Yeah, this isn't the Fran McGee Appreciation Society and the
We'll
Magic Meg,
rename it for a week.
the Magic Meg fan club. This is we're not all these fan clubs for nothing. But it's tough because you just see the post that they put on, don't you? That it's just here's the Tigers score. It's Bristol 50, Tigers 12, and that there are a lot of positives, and that's why I am imploring the fans, do watch that game, and you can see the fight, you can see stuff being built in, and we're imploring the club as well to promo the hell out of these games, because Tigers fans are the best fans in the country. That's not me being biased, that's me being like, this is 20,000 plus fans in a cost of living crisis turn out for the men consistently, and backs the men through a really tough period before COVID. The attendance figure was disappointing. I think we should address that more in depth. It was only 662, which is, it hurts reading that, and I'm sure there's a lot of reasons why people can't go there. And obviously, Jess, you were ill. Obviously, I was doing my bit supporting the club, being on the plane to La Rochelle. So, obviously, there are lots of reasons why that figure was low. And this isn't an attack on any fans or the club by no means, but that figure can be a lot higher. It should be a lot higher, and there is, again, this is me saying, with the Six Nations, with the Men's Six Nations and the Gallagher Premiership break, there is this opportunity to start getting real big crowd figures into Matty Ellerwood's Welford Road to support the girls going forward, and help be that 16th person in a close nip and tuck game that could see the girls get their first ever PW win.
I would like to see more Tigers fans at the stadium. It's really hypocritical for me because I wasn't there, but I do assure you, the cough was really horrendous at the weekend. I felt ill, and I'm still having to mute my mic every now and again to cough and hack up. So annoyingly, it probably was the right decision for me not to go, even though I hated kind of watching it on the. On the TV. It's not very often I miss out a trip to Matty Ellerwood's Welford Road. But I would like to see more there. And I'm really interesting to hear from the fans. Like, if you did go, what was your experience like? If you didn't go, what would help you go in the future? I think that's kind of where we can learn and get some engagement on this. Is it because you had prioritized other things, family stuff, because the La Rochelle game was on TV on the Sunday, so other things had to be done on the Saturday? Was it because you were with the men's team at La Rochelle? Were you ill like me? There's a few bugs going around that's been really, really nasty. Is it other things that prevented you from going? I think I'm really keen to hear about if you did go, what did you like, enjoy? If you didn't go, kind of what would help you to go, or how can we make it easier for you to go? I think that's something I'm really keen to hear about. I am shuffling papers. I am possibly also muting the recording to cough every now and again. But I am here. I am ready. It is time for the news. So, as is traditional, I will start with the rest of the PWR results that took place at the weekend. Harlequins 26, Loughborough Lightning 29. Oh, very close game. Very close. Saracens 39, Exeter 26. That was one and two, top two in the league playing each other at the weekend. Trailfinders 27, Gloucester Hartbury 33. So interesting scores. I think obviously eyes were on that kind of Saris Exeter fixture, but for me, it seemed like the Quins Lightning game was really exciting, just 3 points in it. Moving on to the next news segment, there's two women's rugby news things to bring you. Both have kind of hit news channels in the past 24, 48, 72 hours. The first one is that Joy Neville, who's an Irish match official, is retiring from international refereeing to take up a match official development role at Connacht. She was the first female to referee in a Men's World Cup, and she has done both on-pitch officiating and she's been a TMO. She also was a player. She captained Ireland during the 2009 Six Nations. She's, as I say, she's done a lot of things, broken a lot of glass ceilings within match official work. She's been involved in Women's Rugby World Cup finals. Then she's been involved in Men's Rugby World Cups. And I can now, as I say, she's kind of paved the way for female match officials, along with others who are doing excellent work. So the fact that she's now got a development role where she can help develop the next lot of match officials in the Connacht province is really exciting, because she can share some of her experiences and make it easier for the next people to come up and break new ground. So I think a massive well done goes to Joy Neville for an amazing career as a match official, and we're looking forward to her being an inspiring figure in match official development in the Connacht province.
Yeah, absolutely.
Announced today, this bit was recorded on a cold Tuesday afternoon, evening. Today it was announced that there will be a British and Irish Lions women's tour. The first tour will be in 2027 to face New Zealand. There will be three test matches. There will be pre-test fixtures because the full schedule is yet to be finalised. We don't know what those pre-test fixtures are going to look like. A shout out goes to Shauna Brown, who we faced in Quins a couple of weeks ago. She's been, I think, part of the committee, I think, or they did a feasibility study, and there was a range of people, including Shauna Brown, that kind of helped steer the ship on getting a British and Irish Lions women's tour. It's been received with mixed reviews. I think twofold sort of reviews, really. One, the part of the mixed reviews has come from a seeing of a copy and pasting of men's rugby. So the way this British and Irish Lions women's tour has been conducted feels a copy and paste of what occurs in men's rugby. People have gone, well, why not tour to France, or why not have fixtures in the home nations? It would be 2 years after the Home World Cup, so a great way to use some of that momentum. But then we can argue the momentum might be there in the viewing figures, watching British and Irish Lions play New Zealand. It's tricky. There's also a bit of mixed reviews or concerns that this will be an England heavy side, and that there'll only be a smattering of the other home nations representation in there. 2027 is not a long way off, but hopefully the development of the rest of the home nations continues, and we can see more than just a smattering of Scotland, Wales, and Irish players in. the Lions squad. It's, you know, it should be just more than just England with a few home rest of the home nations in.
Yeah.
What do I feel about it? I'm excited because I adore the Lions. I probably get excited more so for a men's Lions tour than I do for a men's World Cup, or certainly in equal amounts of excitement. So I'm excited to see what a women's Lions tour looks like, feels like, hoping we get the same amount of kind of bonkers traveling support than the Lions men's tours do. I hope that this Lions tour and the development it might bring is used to continue to spread good work that women's rugby needs to do. So, more female friendly and female specific coaching, a wider development of the home nations that is just beyond Red Roses. You know, we're talking investment into Scotland, Ireland, Wales, investment into pathways, into other structures, investment into more coaching. I'm hoping that we can use a female Lions tour to continue to push the way on some of the things that need to be pushed. I am concerned about a copy and paste, but probably would have liked a home tour from a biased perspective, in that I haven't yet been to see a British and Irish Lions fixture, and I would very, very much, very, very much like to do so. So that was probably a biased comment on my account. Nevertheless, I'm excited. I am excited. But I am also pleased that it's being met with mixed reviews, because whenever we announce something in women's rugby, we shouldn't just go, hooray, we've announced something, isn't it exciting? We should question it, challenge it, and hold it up to rigorous standards. We shouldn't just be thankful for something because we're getting something. We shouldn't just be grateful. You know, we should be going, yes, this is exciting. Is it the right thing for us that it looks like this? Should it look like this? Should we be doing X? It's absolutely right that things are challenged and questioned, and we don't just get handed things and that we're immediately grateful. So I'm glad that before this work went in, there was a feasibility study that probably looked at all the things that I'm asked that I was, you know, asking for. And I hope that we can use this to drive, everybody says, or drive the conversation forward. Bollocks to the conversation being driven forward. I want action being driven forward now. I'm fed up of things being talked about, and I would like action being driven forward. So I'm hoping that the British and Irish Lions Women's Tour drives things forward to action, like female specific or female tailored coaching in around concussion, neck strength, menstruation at grassroots level, menopause, all the way round, return from pregnancy, postpartum training. What does that look like? What does it look like for everybody? ACLs, specific rugby boots. Do women's rugby need it? Can we have a study in that and scientific exploration, because they've got it in the football? Can we have more glass ceilings smashed for referees, coaches, groundspeople, you know, match officials, TMOs, physios, doctors, managers, CEOs, everything? So I'm hoping that this, as I already said, bollocks to driving a conversation forward. I would like anything new that happens in women's rugby now, or anything that is changed, to be quite rightly questioned, because we shouldn't just accept things and be grateful for them. Women's sport has a history of doing that in the past, and it's shout out to my New Zealand mate Alice Soper, who I think said we should just stop being so effing grateful for stuff and challenge it and just keep pushing on. So yes, we're quite right to challenge it and meet things with mixed reviews, because that's what men's rugby or men's sport and women's sport as a whole should do. And no more driving a conversation forward. Let's ditch that phrase in 2024. I want to drive action forward. I ranted for about 5 minutes there.
I was a little bit frustrated with some of the criticism. I think a lot, especially around the criticism that it's going to be an England heavy Lions tour. I think that was very disrespectful. I think a lot of Celtic players will look at that and feel very disrespected from that. Because yes, the other nations are behind England on that front, but 2027 is still a few years away, and there's plenty of time for professionalisation of central contracts in Wales and Scotland, and hopefully again another plea to the Irish RFU. Yeah, isn't all your men's pathways and public schools in Dublin great, but can that be in the women's rugby? Can that be outside of Dublin? All those things as well. But I'm a bit, I felt some of the comments around it being an English heavy tour is a bit disrespectful, and I hope that that motivates a lot of Celtic players moving forward. Players like Tuipulotu for Gloucester-Hartbury, a place for Wales. Our very own Scottish contingent. We're quite a long time away from that Lions tour, so we don't have to get too heavy in terms of the actual participate. Who is in Lions contention already? I hate that for the men's Lions tours. So that was my views on it. I definitely think in terms of copy and paste, did it have to be New Zealand? Could it have been Canada? Could have been, a place where women's rugby is strong already, and we could have used that Lions image to celebrate that. But I definitely think that there's a lot of women that would have grown up aspiring to be a Lion, aspiring to play for the British and Irish Lions, and that dream has now come a reality. So I definitely think that the time is right, and you're absolutely right. We need to stop talking about driving the conversation forward and being like, we need to wait for the other unions to catch up. We need to wait for rugby to become more for women's rugby to become more professional. We need something meaningful to actually spark that rather than just a CEO comment in an Instagram post. And I definitely think that this could be a real game-changing moment for the women's game. So yes, I'm frustrated that it potentially could have been somewhere like Canada, and they've just sort of like, oh, let's go to New Zealand because that's a great place where the men's lines go. Like, I am disappointed about that. As I've said, like, I'm a bit frustrated with some of the comments by people in social media that I think is disrespectful to the quality of players that is outside of English women's rugby that could potentially play for the Lions. But yeah, I think it's still going to be a great opportunity. It's encouraging a lot of discourse already, and hopefully by 2027, and when this tour takes place, we'll be in a place where we can go, yeah, that was a real game-changing moment.
This week, I spoke to the amazing Nick Heath. We chatted about his experiences of commentating on the TNT game at Mattioli Woods Welford Road, his thoughts about Tigers and how they're building through the season and looking forward to the years to come and seeing how we perform in the PWR. We also spoke about the Lions Tour news and started to get excited about what that means. And we looked forward and looked back at past World Cups. We reminisced about the 2014 World Cup when England women lifted that trophy, and we start to get extremely excited about the 2025 Home World Cup. Hey Nick, welcome to the pod. Obviously, or not, maybe not obviously, for those that were there, you commentated for TNT on the Tigers versus Bristol game at the weekend. What were your thoughts about the game? Obviously, we have spoken about that Fran try that wasn't a try, disallowed forward pass. There were some great moments in it. What were your thoughts about the game overall?
Yeah, first of all, thank you very much for having me. Lovely to be here, having been listening in and you using your insight to help support the commentary notes that I've been able to make. It was a shame that the scoreline ended up the way that it did, and certainly there was a moment there that I think, had that try gone in, then all of a sudden we could have been looking at quite a different game. It would have certainly made Bristol Bears a lot more nervous. And I think the try should have stood. I think there are a fair amount of people out there that say the lead commentator shouldn't particularly have an opinion because they're very rarely the person that has played the game. My dad was a ref for 25 years. I've spent 40 years watching rugby. I've studied the laws to become a referee at one stage. with the amount of minutes under my belt, I would argue I'm perfectly entitled to comment on what I see. People may be more interested in my co-commentator, but I did have to speak up at the time, as much as it caused a bit of amusing back and forth between me and Cat Merchant. I didn't think it was a forward pass. I think it was you know, ruled that because it had gone over the line, you know, passed from behind the line and gone in front. But it's a very boring laws of physics conversation, Jess. But ultimately, for me, the hands went backwards. And if you're both moving at pace, then it will appear to go from one to the other. So anyway, it is a little bit, you know, ifs and buts and all that. But it was a sensational wheels from Fran McGee, as I think Tigers fans are getting used to and getting excited about. There's definitely that sense of those that are getting more familiar with the team that they're getting out of their seat when the ball gets down Fran's channel. It was one of those sort of, you can really see these shoots of positivity and opportunity that are going to come for Tigers. But you've got a Bristol Bears side that are, particularly I think them turning up, they were very keen. You know, they're each needing to prove to Dave Ward that they're understanding the systems and that the new players are slotting in and getting on top of it. And so they sort of had a mission of their own, not only to get the win, but to actually really show that things are starting to click. And they didn't for various parts of the game. But I think it was I think Tigers tired pretty well in that last 20 minutes, and because they'd worked their socks off basically up to that point. And that's where those kind of last 3-4 tries rain in, and all of a sudden you bring up 50 points.
Yeah, and you mentioned the kind of positive shoots that are starting to happen. Obviously, Vicky McQueen and all of the coaches are consistently saying Tigers are building. It's the first year in the PWR. I think it's, for me, it's sort of exposed the gulf that is there between championship teams and the top flight of domestic women's rugby in this country. What are your thoughts about Tigers so far this season? Is there, you know, fill me with hope.
Yeah, well, and the hope is that there's realism, and along with the realism, they're maintaining hope and positivity. I had a conversation, you know, in the media room before the game with Vicky McQueen, and I've had a couple of good chats with Tom Hudson this season, and there's a real understanding within the group that this is not going to be the year they are challenging for anything, really. This is going to be the year that they put a marker down. They start to, you know, gel and bond and get used to each other, know where their strengths and weaknesses are. You know, they've had the opportunity to bring in Claire Gallagher. I think that we may have another Canadian joining the ranks as well at some point. And so I think they're going to recognize as they grow where they can sprinkle a bit of international talent on top. But I think for me, the most interesting question, therefore, to Tom and to Vicky was, you know, how, if you know that that's the case, if you know that you're not necessarily challenging now, how do you keep positive? How do you keep people engaged and interested? Because it's just like, well, I'm turning up to training twice a week and I'm playing a match at the weekend and we expect to get beaten. So what's the point? I mean, it would be very easy to slip into that mentality, and that's not happening. So that's huge testament to the coaching crew, but also to the players, because I think there's been transparency and honesty from the coaches that, you know, it is year one, or year one in PWR, and so they're going to be a little bit way behind everybody else. But speaking of Dave Ward last week, the reason they took a full gun Bears team there is out of total and utter respect. You know, he said Tigers are going to turn a team over this season. They will get that win, arguably at home, and whoever it is not going to be happy. And he was determined that it wasn't going to be them. You know, what were they? They were 12-5 up against Saracens after 20 minutes. I know it's only 20 minutes, but it's belief. It's showing, you know, what you can do. And for a moment there, it was nearly 17 or 19, 26 against Bristol Bears, you know, 5-10 minutes into the second half. So that would have, you know, that those are those moments where you're sat watching a game and your co-com or someone just shows you their phone because it's a score that's somewhere else in the league. And I dare say, had that McGee try gone in, there'd have been people at Allianz Park, at the Stonex, I should say, who would have been showing the scoreline to each other going, "Cool, blimey, Tigers are within a score of Bristol Bears." So those are the moments that bring excitement. And I think what they're learning, you know, there are debutants coming left, right and centre. But I think I think their team culture seems really positive. I loved Talia Brody's comment the week before when she said, we're starting off as a rebellion, trying to take on the rest of the teams with empires behind them, which is just great fighting talk. It's great. It's great reality. They know where they're at, but they also, you know where they want to go. But it's those sort of phrases that get you fired up in the locker room and say, well, let's go out and give it everything we can. And they're certainly determined to do that each week.
Yeah, quite. And obviously, it is kind of a revamped women's league. There's two new teams in, Trailfinders and Tigers. It's a new marketing campaign, powered differently behind PWR. What's been your favourite moment so far of this season's PWR? Has been a standout moment where you think, yeah, that's it. That's something we'll look back in a few years and go, that was a cracking moment.
I think, well, I'd love to refer to the games themselves, and I think we've had a few crackers already. But actually, I think the thing that made a few people sit up and take notice, and actually is a different way of doing things, was that Powered Differently launch and that campaign, and actually how the players were represented. And I heard all the bits behind the scenes, like they wanted to do something different. Belinda Moore, when she was, you know, in the running to potentially come on board as CEO, this was one of the sort of dreams she had, the vision she had in her mind as to how we could start to look at women's sport or women's rugby and make it stand out on its own. And she had this idea that bring the girls in, bring the players in, the representatives from the club, and you know, service them with clothes and clothes and clothes on rails upon rail, and let them come in and find what they want to wear and express themselves and have hair and makeup on standby and choose to do what they want. And she was able to drop by that day, but she actually, you know, by her own admission, she didn't want to be there. She didn't want them to feel like, you know, the headmistress was watching. That's not a role she wants to be seen as having, but certainly not to the players on a day like that. And by all accounts, the players absolutely loved it and were like, you know, can I try this or can I look at that? And it allowed them all to come across in really individual ways. And the first images I saw was the sort of group shot. And I sort of thought, oh, it's interesting. It's all quite different. I like the individuality, but I'm not quite sure what the group shot's saying. But actually when it then was sort of pushed out as individual shots of each player and actually them expressing themselves to camera, that's when it really hit me. That's when it really made sense to me. And you know, I've started up a separate little business strand to look after and try and do more of the key storytelling around the women's game, because there are so many brilliant stories. And if World Rugby through WXV or other initiatives and through the RFU with PWR and clubs or whatever, if this money is going to go in to training and infrastructure globally, then for me, we also have to get the public in touch with who these people are. And, you know, I made it a personal crusade a couple of seasons ago to start ringing up the likes of Gloucester and saying, well, you've just published your men's team news at midday on a Friday. Where are the women? And it would be a buried article on the website. And I'm saying, well, if you've got some 60-year-old season ticket holder who sat at home and he habitually clicks on your website every Friday at midday to check out the team news, what are you doing to reach that person? What are you doing? If you're putting up the women's team news next to it and it says, England scrum half Mo Hunt is back in the mix ahead of our big game against Bath this weekend, or, you know, whatever it might be. Obviously not Bath, but those kind of West Country derbies or whatever it might be. No one's necessarily saying they're going to come that week, but something clicks, something is seen. And then a week later, perhaps there's something in the Gloucester programme that says, oh, there's been a big injury to so-and-so. And they say, oh, apparently our co-captain's been injured. And all, you just start these conversations by making the information as apparent and available and easy to access as possible to get those that might not be actively seeking supporting the women's game and their teams, give them the shortest cut to get there. And so I think by creating stories, by bringing personalities to the fore, we start to allow people to engage in who people are, who the teams are. I might turn up because I've heard that that player is quite cool or quite fun or has got this amazing sidestep or gets us out of our chair when they're dashing down the wing or they're running through people at 100 miles an hour like we're used to seeing plenty of those Red Roses forwards doing. So, I think long-winded answer, but I think it was how it all started, really. I thought there was a very nice tone set, and I think we have had some great rugby, but I think it's now it's just beginning to settle. I know that people are a bit upset that some of the PWR games are not on, linear TNT while we've got these European weekends. I know that that is simply down to the fact that with the amount of sport TNT show and with their agreements on European rugby, there just isn't a scheduled slot. Now, that might not make PWR fans very happy, but there was possibly a time when they weren't going to be able to show games, and they are available via the red button. So we are doing them, and hopefully people can find them. I think how it all started in finding the fact and elevating the fact that we have incredible athletes, we have great people, great personalities, then it's a good way to go forward to tell these stories and get people into the game.
Yeah, massively. The power of stories in sport is something I keep coming back to in my coaching and all my work. And speaking of stories, I think my social media timeline was filled yesterday. It wasn't exactly a slow news day, but I can't let these sort of few minutes speaking to you go by without chatting about the Women's Lions Tour. We spoke about it earlier in the news section, and I said it was greeted with mixed reviews, and I'm sort of pleased that it's greeted with mixed reviews. I don't think we should just be glad and accept everything that comes our way blindly. What are your thoughts about it all?
Yeah, I mean, certainly what you say on a broader note there, I think, is important. I'm in a WhatsApp group with a few journalists and broadcasters and people who've been advocates for the women's game for a number of years. And one of the things we regularly say is, you know, if our advocacy and our voices are going to be effective in any way, moaning about everything that isn't good enough is not going to get you anywhere. Now, appreciating when things are good and when positive initiatives are coming, or when a gesture is good and perhaps you need to praise it like a good dog to make more of the gestures come the right way, that has value as well. And while all the time remaining a critical friend to still answer still ask the awkward questions. So you're right, it's important to be positive, but also know when things still aren't good enough, and in a lot of fronts they still aren't. But I was quite vocal about the fact that I wasn't entirely sure we needed a Women's Lions. I think some people see even the Men's Lions as a little bit crony, a little bit old-fashioned. Obviously, there are plenty of people that absolutely love it as a concept. I think the brand of the Lions took a bit of a dent just because of COVID and how the South Africa tour in 2021 had to be done. And I think if we were just a couple of years after that memorable 2017 tour and how that all went, then I think fires might burn a little brighter. It is incredible. I've reported on a couple of the men's tours in Australia in 2013 and in New Zealand on 2017, and they are incredible. And you find these people that have been saving for the previous either 4 years or 8 years to say, right, well, or even 12 years sometimes, when they say, well, we went to New Zealand, but we were only ever going to come back here 12 years later, and we've saved up the thousands of pounds it's going to cost to do it on the official tour or whatever. So the women joining, for me, it always had to be that we cannot replicate the men's tour. It has to think differently. I was very relieved to hear from Ben Calverley yesterday, the CEO of the British and Irish Lions, that they are thinking differently, and they had multiple people willing to host a tour, by all accounts. They weren't willing to discuss who those were, but for them, the Lions brand, as he kept saying, is the best of the best against the best. So for them, going and playing the Black Ferns as the first series made sense. I think ultimately it also makes sense because it is going to be the most competitive, and there probably wouldn't quite be anywhere else right now, even in, well, maybe in 3 years. You know, we are talking a difference of 3 years. It's important to remember. But, you know, it makes a lot of sense. But he said France could be one on the horizon. And I think, perhaps the idea of a North America side, who's to say that the USA and Canada couldn't combine, and then you've got some sort of version of a North America All-Stars against the Lions in future. So I think, you know, we are here now. The difference being that those of us that weren't quite sure whether it should happen, you know, do we need to follow the men? Well, it's happening. And as I tweeted out yesterday, we want people in women's rugby to be making bold and brave decisions and moving things forward. And just because it might be something that we have question marks over whether it's following an old, you know, men's model, actually, this is big. And the highest ceiling that a British and Irish women's rugby player could get to was to play for their country. Now, if Women's Lions, you know, manages to to achieve the same kind of allure and platform that the men's does, well, actually, it's just pushed the ceiling a little bit higher. My favourite comment was Nolly Waterman, who was at the launch yesterday, said to me, my main thoughts are, I feel sorry for the players that were planning to hang up the boots in 2025 that really fancy a chance of trying to become one of the first ever Lions. So I think she's got a point. Be quite funny, that. So I'm behind it now. It's here. You know, there's no point sitting and chirruping from the side that, well, this should never have happened. It should. I still have major questions. They've said there's going to be no WXV because of a touring year in 27. We all knew that was likely to be the Lions. It is the Lions. But what about those teams, particularly in WXV 2 and 3? Are World Rugby going to offer them other opportunities? Could there be an element of WXV that goes on at the same time? I don't know. But it certainly seems like, you know, this is satisfying the haves and perhaps the have-nots, those further down the international pecking order, are not being given the same opportunities, certainly that we know of at this stage. So I think there are big question marks over that, because I think that's a whole aspect of the men's game that has proven to be very divisive, and it would be horrible to see the same old nations in the women's game getting all the good stuff and the rest struggling to develop, because diversity and strength across the board is what we really need. And, you know, we're moving to the biggest ever raft of teams at a World Cup in 2025, and on it will kick beyond that, and we need more competitive nations. So, yeah, you know, it's underway. We are here. I think it's fun to already, even though I'm sick of people picking their Lions 15s more than a year in advance, I'm 3 years away and I'm already thinking, wow, how old are they going to be and where could they fit in, and who's going to take Sarah Byrne's place if she's not ready, and who's going to, you know. So, yeah, it's quite interesting. And people like Eleanor Snowsill, who are absolutely passionate about saying it is not going to be an England team plus also Rams. And I think she's right. You've only got to look at what the investment has done, for example, to the Welsh programme in the last 18 months and the developments they've made in terms of the speed of that progress. 3 years is quite a long time, really, for there to be another 2 or 3 years worth of you know, women's players that might come through the system that have been training and playing to a higher professional standard through 17, 18, 19, on their way through. So I think there's more than the possibility of a couple of bolters from a non-England nation. I think there could be by then a real opportunity, and certainly this is, well, what a carrot rather than stick this is for those nations to say, well, let's make sure that we know that this is going to be a fairly balanced squad. They said it's going to be merit based only, no quota system. So it is a chance for the rest of them to chase down the red roses and get those red shirts off their backs if they feel like that's going to be the natural way of it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's nice to have an incentive for other nations to pull up and invest in women's rugby and continue to invest long term. Obviously, you mentioned the World Cup. 2024 brings an anniversary, and I can instantly kind of recall where I was the moment England women lifted the World Cup in 2014. I was in my parents' house, obviously living at home, watching it on the small telly in the kitchen, jumping up and down for joy. Obviously, you were with the team as a journalist. What are your thoughts now, scarily 10 years on, especially as we build into a home World Cup? What are you thinking and feeling?
Yeah, I mean, that was an incredible day. And yeah, what a privilege. I mean, I was doing lots of kind of videography work around that time. And it so happened that the in-house team at the RFU, they had covered an England men's tour that summer, and they were overdue so many days off. They said, well, actually, we have to give them time off. And Julia Hutton, who was in charge of the kind of women's program on the media side, said, well, you know the girls, you've interviewed them a lot, we know your skill set, would you come and be our in-house videographer for the 2 weeks of the tour? Which I did. And obviously you don't go away and do that and imagine that you'll be leaving the stadium on the bus with the team, with the trophy among you as well. It was a truly, truly incredible honour and amazing thing to be part of. And yeah, I don't know where the 10 years has gone, Jess. I'm sure you don't either. But that was incredible. And to have, you know, enjoyed the World Cups we've had since. I found 2017 a bit of an up and down World Cup, I think. And then obviously we had to postpone a year for New Zealand. So, you know, we had 3 years, then we had 5 years. It's sort of they've been a different cycle. So I think just to have a solid, you know, build into this World Cup, it'll be another three. You know, it's been another 3 years. We're now at the start of 24, so we can say legitimately next year. I think it's hugely exciting, and I'm connected to people that I know are joining the organising committee side and taking on some really key roles there. And so I'm able to see some of the planning that's already going on. And that's hugely exciting. And so much of it about legacy and what they can do. And part of the RFU's Every Rose strategy. And there are key women in those positions. You know, Alex Teasdale, one of them in charge of the women's and girls strategy at the RFU. They really care. They really want to do the right thing. And there will be an overpouring of funding that will go to the Welsh, the Scottish and the Irish in terms of it being hosted, you know, in England and therefore the United Kingdom and how that will work with funds allocated through World Rugby. So there are real tangible benefits that will come from hosting this World Cup. And then, you know, that's almost the boring logistical stuff on the inside that I'm aware of. And then you've just got to look a little bit more romantically and emotionally at what a home World Cup does for young girls in this country. And perhaps those stalwart old blokes in rugby clubs that have been denying their girls the chance to play on the first 15 pitch or letting them use the changing rooms for God knows how many years, who might finally either change their mind or perhaps in some cases more beneficially move on and let someone with a bit more of a modern take on things acknowledge that women's rugby is brilliant. There needs to be room for everybody. And more's the point, the women's sections and girls sections are growing at such a rate that unless rugby clubs embrace them, they'll go down the pan. Simple as that. So I think it's a really amazing North Star for the game in this country. I can't really begin to think about what would happen in this country if the Red Roses were able to go all the way. I don't know how John Mitchell copes with, you know, keeping that in check, keeping it their ultimate mission, because they are a team where they will be expected to get to the final. There's no doubt about it. And we will expect to see the Black Ferns there. Now, we all expected that in 2014 and the Irish did a job, which meant they weren't. I'm not sure that the international landscape is in such a point where that's likely to happen, but it is, you know, 18 months for a France team to really get back to their very best and potentially cause an upset again. The Canadians are always strong. Would love to see the USA, you know, come a little bit back to form. I'm still hugely excited. I'm also excited for I think the England is very well placed with the development of the game, with the conversations that are going on, and the fact that it will be so regionalized as well as a competition for things to be popping up left, right and centre that we didn't think necessarily would happen, for there to be watch parties in places or for there to be just parties around games and people turning up and showing up. And I think that side of things is really exciting. It will hopefully be a real festival and celebration of the sport. And yeah, I think be the catalyst that moves it on another 5-10 paces that we hope it will. And it is now interesting in the context of that Lions announcement this week that actually we now have a home World Cup in 2025. And beyond that, with just 2 years after it, we will be able to talk with real excitement about the first Women's Lions tour that will go to New Zealand. And sort of those two things next to each other, I think, are massive because it keeps the top end and the elite end of the women's game, despite what I say, obviously, about the impact perhaps on those two teams, on those two tiers lower down, certainly in WXV terms. But it, the narrative needs to be strong and the games need to be quality for us to continue the outreach of the game and to gain new followers and new fans. And so a World Cup and yeah, a Lions tour to New Zealand soon after. I think those two things now on the calendar over the next, you know, what are we, 4 years, 3-4 years, is pretty exciting.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
So we're about halfway through our podcast episode. So this is a good halfway marker. If you're still listening to us ramble about forward passes and scrums, we're very, very grateful. But this is just another reminder to keep the amazing work that you guys, the listeners, have been doing and interacting with us on our social media. If you're unaware, that is the LTW at LTW Fancast on Twitter. And then if you do want to give us an email, our email address is ltwfancast@gmail.com. You know, we're very grateful for any feedback, any interaction. So keep that going. Keep up that going with the top Tiger Times. They've been really, really good. We had one or two this week, more or less focused on the Fran McGee. Should have been a try, no try. So I think we've perhaps done that to death. But you know, keep sending in your top Tiger Times. And yeah, also if you're listening to us on Spotify, do give us a rating or a like. And if there's a similar service on your own podcast provider, do that so as well. But yeah, keep up the great work, guys, and on to the rest of the pod.
To our player profile, and we are staying with the forwards this week, and we're going to look at prop and Scottish international Leah Bartlett. I've got a few facts that have come straight from the Scottish Rugby website, so if they are wrong this week, you can take it up with Scottish Rugby and not with me. I do my research. So she started playing rugby at 5 years old at Loughborough Rugby Club. She played for Loughborough Town and Loughborough Lightning. Obviously, she came to us from Loughborough Lightning, so a nice little cross-county switch there, like Amanda Schwartz. She's got 30 caps, she's got 23 starts for Scotland, and she's got 5 tries for her international team. I think what's most exciting for me moving into a Six Nations period shortly is that we could see her and Ellis Martin at some point in the front row for Six Nations playing for Scotland, which is an exciting prospect for Tigers to see their international players playing in the Six Nations and then having the opportunity to then come back and see them play at Matty Ollie Woods Welford Road for Tigers. That's really exciting. There's always a buzz when our internationals return for the men's team. So if we can replicate some of that buzz for the women's Six Nations when our returning internationals come back, that was really exciting. And I'm kind of, when we did this player profile, I was recalling the interview that we did with Churchy Knight that we've referenced a lot this week. We did last week. And I was kind of conscious we've got this strong history of like a prop school understudy at Tigers. Obviously it's existed for a long time in the men's team. Recent iterations have been Cole Hayes, but the prop kind of school and understudy system has gone back a while and it's had this history of producing really strong props for Tigers. Are we now seeing that prop school start to form with the women's team? With obviously we've got Leah Bartlett, strong international player, understudy to her, Churchy Knight, learning off her, asking loads of questions. And I think that's a really exciting, if we talk about not just this season and having these exciting internationals like Bartlett, but also long-term, producing props of high standard and using players' abilities to learn and scrummage against each other and having a prop school, as we've seen in the men's team, is really, really exciting. Jacob, what are your thoughts about Leah?
I thought she was quite prominent in the Bristol game. You know, I know that the scrum was under a lot of pressure, but we've kind of addressed that in our match review. Sorry, but yeah, I thought she was looking really good. In loose and carrying, she was really assured. You know, kind of never taking a backward step, always sort of making, you know, that she was a handful for Bears to handle in the handful to handle. That's quite hard to say in the carry. So yeah, no, she's sort of become our first choice starting loose head this season. And the Bristol game was sort of the second game in a row. We had the all Scottish front row of Bartlett, Martin and Cockburn. So, you know, potentially we could see, you know, that there, it's not without the realms of possibility that that Scotland will be fielding an all Tigers front row for Scotland women in the Six Nations, which would be awesome. And to have that at the same time that, you know, we could see potentially Hayes and Cole continue sort of their rotation that they've got at Tigers at the moment and continue that in an England jersey, a really nice, exciting parallel and something to keep our eye on. But yeah, no, I think it's great that we've got someone in like Leia who players like Churchy can learn off and can only grow. And yeah, like we've obviously got a really proud tradition at Leicester Tigers of having that prop school. On both Loosehead and Tighthead, obviously, you know, Ellis Genge first came in when Marcus Iyerza was sort of had sort of one or two seasons left, and he was, you know, and Genge learned so much off Marcus and became an incredible international class, arguably world class scrummager from his time with Marcus. And I think to have something similar in the women's setup is great. And hopefully, as you say, this is kind of a long term thing. It can, you know, it'd be amazing as if in 5 or 6 years' time we're interviewing Churchy Knight again, and she's the seasoned PWR first class level prop, and she's helping out the next girl coming up behind her, which would be an awesome thing. So, yeah, again, another example of a Loughborough Lightning, Loughborough Uni, Loughborough gal by the looks of it. So, although she's playing for Scotland, it seems that she was sort of born and bred in Loughborough. So it's, you know, it's really good that she's another sort of Leicestershire gal playing for Leicester Tigers, not the Saints affiliated rugby club. So yeah, no, really, really good, and I'm looking forward to see how she gets on for the rest of the season. But definitely, I know our scrum was struggling a little bit, but when we've got Sangapolu at blindside flanker, and then Katha Jacobs and Ether Donaldson or Donaldson and Charlotte Frey as our second row pairing, I think our scrum will really start to bear fruit. But yeah, anything else on that at all, Jess? I think, I mean, you know, it's quite hard potentially with squad speculation with Scotland, because as we've talked about in previous pods, they'll probably, Scotland women will probably be selecting University of Edinburgh players that we're perhaps not entirely aware of. So, you know, predicting first choice team selections can perhaps be a little bit tricky, but I mean, you know, I certainly don't think it's out of the realms of possibility we'll be seeing an all Tigers front row for Scotland in the Women's Six Nations.
Yeah, there's obviously the Celtic Challenge, which I think is going on at the moment, which is two Scottish teams in there aligned to Edinburgh Rugby and Glasgow Warriors. Claire Cruikshank obviously was in that University of Edinburgh team, now working on Edinburgh rugby, kind of in the Celtic Challenge. So there's probably some talent in there that we're missing, but we know there's such a strong Scottish contingent in the PWR, so we can guarantee that majority of the players will probably feature PWR teams, or will come from PWR teams, because there's such a strong Scottish contingent in the PWR. We spoke about that a couple of weeks ago. I'm excited that we've got a possibility of an all Scottish Tigers front row, at least featuring in the squad, hopefully playing together at some point, because what an amazing moment for the club that would be. But I'm kind of recalling stuff on social media. Every now and again, there's talk of, I think there's a revitalised England rugby scrum development programme, certainly for the men's pathway, going on at the moment, because it was identified there'd been a drop-off in good prop development programmes over the last couple of years. There was Scrum Factory, for those that remember that, which was an RFU course you could do designed to help coaches get better at coaching the scrum. I did that way back when as part of one of my early coach development courses. Graham Smith, who was England women's forwards coach when they won the World Cup, he did a lot of work for England rugby's kind of scrum development pathway, body positioning stuff. But it has fallen by the wayside and been spoken about less and less, but it's been almost a revitalized acknowledgement, and they're putting some systems in place, and they've hired some coaches to kind of get to work on scrum development. I think that focus is mostly for the men's game at the moment, but the history that Tigers have of developing their own props has taken place in a where there hasn't been as much scrum development. There's been a gulf of it, an absence of it. So in that absence, we've brought on this kind of little prop school mentoring system. And I think how we've picked when to start our props, when to have them as replacements in this prop school has worked really well. And I think Vicky McQueen and the rest of the coaches are probably learning from that rich history. And if there's anything we can do as a women's team, as a club, to help improve the development of props in this country in the women's game, it will certainly sort of complement the reawakening or recognition of more scrum development that's currently happening in the men's game.
Yeah, absolutely. As you said, obviously we're recording as the England's men's Six Nations as teams has just been announced, and before we press record, me and Jess are talking a lot about sort of the standard of props in the scrummaging department below sort of Marler and Cole, and how that is potentially a worry for England men going forward. And I think the nature of the England women's scrummaging has always been very, very strong. You know, going from sort of Rocky Clark to now we've got the likes of Sarah Byrne. We've always been blessed with amazing scrummagers who could be a really handful in the park. And yeah, it'd be amazing to see Tigers continue that strong sort of propping condition in the women's game. So yeah, another sort of another shorter player profile there for you guys. But an interesting player. And I think, you know, I again, like I said, I think she was pretty prominent in the Bristol game. So I'm looking forward to see how Leia gets on with for the rest of the season for club and then hopefully country as well. So on to the rest of the pod.
So, drum roll, because we are moving on to the preview, and we are previewing Sail Sharks Away, cue Sail Away song by Enya. I don't know. It's
Sail Away.
Yeah, what's the real title of the song? Don't know, but cue the Sail Away song. Because we are facing Sail Sharks Women on Sunday and we're kicking off at 2. There's a bit of a clash. It's all going on in Sail, basically, because the Sail Sharks men's team are playing at Salford Stadium, their usual ground, and they are playing La Rochelle. But they haven't, for whatever reason, and as we've gone into in the past, there's tons of logistical shenanigans that go on when organising a doubleheader. And for whatever reason, that just hasn't come off for Sale this week, because the Sail Sharks women are kicking off an hour later at the Corp Axe Stadium. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, which is Hayward Road ground, Sail Football Club, Sail FC Rugby Club. Unfortunately for Sail Sharks fans, they're going to have to choose between La Rochelle and us, which is tricky. But I think this clash probably highlights the vast amount of behind-the-scenes work that has to go into getting double headers and how difficult it can be. And it's, you know, it's not always going to come off. There's a whole host of reasons probably why they weren't able to get a double header on Sunday in Sale. It's disappointing. It is disappointing. But at the same time, it's really good for the city of Manchester and Sale, because it's going to be two high quality top rugby matches going on within the city on Sunday. But as I say, it's a shame for Sale Sharks fans, because they're going to have to choose one or the other pretty much, because there's only an hour's difference in the kickoff time. So it's a little less than ideal. If one was like 1 o'clock kickoff and one was like a 4 o'clock kickoff, that would kind of work. You could hightail it over, but I'm guessing it's logistics with it being Champions Cup and not Prem, because all of our double headers have been men's Gallagher Prem rugby.
Yeah, I think that's
or like a friendly international. So I'm guessing it's the added dice roll of Champions Cup rugby in there that has just made this not a double header for Sale Sharks fans. Which is a shame. But as people know on this pod, if you'd listened before, I do have a bit of a soft spot for Sale because they work so hard to make the idea that Northern Rugby does matter. I got a Northern Rugby Matters t-shirt, which helped raise money for the women's team, because if Sale Sharks or, you know, Northern women's teams, there is only Sale Sharks in the PWR at the moment. So if they cease to exist in the PWR, there's no top flight Northern women's rugby. The cutoff is us, and everything is sort of south and below us, which is not right. So they do an amazing amount of work, and they do lots of good kind of outreach stuff and linking up with local schools, all of the stuff to help kind of spread the word of rugby in the north, which matters, because when you think about, if you chop this country or drew a line on a map and said that there was only one team above us in the PWR, and then you look at the rest of the country that's missing out, that's mad. Like Carlisle, Newcastle, Penrith, you know, North Yorkshire, you know, all of these places are missing out, and it's just one Northern team. So bigging up Sale Sharks for fighting the good fight on that one. I won't rant about geographical locations of PWR teams any longer, because I shall bore everybody. But I would like to see a greater geographical spread of rugby in general, men's and women's, but particularly women's. But Sale are coached by the amazing Rachel Taylor, who played for Wales. She's a brilliant coach. I've spoken to her on WhatsApp a couple of times, doing work for the bits and pieces, and she's a really kind of creative coach using like concepts like bingo, which I love, in her training. So you can kind of guarantee her training sessions are really fun and purposeful, which is exciting. They are one place above us in the table, but in the, I think one of the seasons, it might have been the World Cup season, they started that season with a real like bang. They were kind of high up in the table until I think a lot of internationals came back. There's a strong international waiting in other teams, but they have had a strong history of being really well and doing really competitive. But as I said, this season, they are one place above us in the table. So I think both teams are kind of eyeing each other up in wanting a win. Certainly, I think we'll be going there hungry and they'll be welcoming us equally as hungry. But this could be a position where, just like the Quins game, Quins had only won one game in the season until they met us. We could be eyeing up a potential first Tigers win in the PWR here. But let's not get ahead of ourselves, because as is traditional in a preview, I will run through some of the players that we might see facing us in a Sale Sharks jersey. So we've got a couple of England players, and a couple of players I know personally, so I'm going to give them a little bit of a shout out as well. So we've got Morwenna Talling for forwards. We've got Molly Kelly, who I coached at Penguins. Molly's awesome. She plays at hooker. We've got Tish Harper, Iona Antwis, who I coached at Penguins. We've got Georgie Paris-Redding, Leah Lyons. We've got the amazing Italian player who kind of is all over social media, Beatrice Rigoni. We've got India Paris-Redding. We've got Holly Bowden, who I coached at Penguins. Shout out to Holly. We've got Lauren Delaney, who's played for Ireland and is a nutritionist. She does some nutritionist work for Sale Sharks as well. And Lizzie Duffy. So there's a couple of Penguins players. I'd like to shout out to those. Iona, Molly and Holly. But they are... Sale Sharks have got some internationals in there, obviously noticeably Beatrice from Italy, who's a fairly recent signing. They've also got Delaney from Ireland, Morwenna Talling, who's done some England stuff, Tish Harper. So they're not short on talent and they're not short on good people who love playing rugby. and they are coached by a brilliant, in my opinion, coach. So this is a tough challenge for us, but I think we're going to go there hungry and really relishing this challenge. And this could be an opportunity that we could take and seize and get our first PWR win. And it would be not only our first PWR win, but it would also be a win away from home, which I think I cast our minds back to earlier in the pod series. We said if all we do is play really well at home and put in strong home performances this season, regardless of the results, we'll be happy. So am I contradicting myself and getting excited and saying we could not only get our first PWR win, we could get a win away from home? But this is an opportunity, I think. Jacob, have I rambled? Am I overexcited? What are your thoughts? We can. I mean, they're hungry. We're hungry. It's going to be exciting, regardless.
Oh yeah. I think what's worth referencing to is that we actually played Sale in the first game of the season in the Alliance Cup, and that scoreline was 36-19. And I think our WXV absence was a bit higher than Sale's. I think Sale had a couple of American players away, but if I am mistaken, I do apologise. But I am under the impression that our international absence was higher, and that scoreline 36-19. That's fairly close. So I am cautiously optimistic. You know, we're always cautiously optimistic. We're always going to be banging the drum. I know. I know potentially we do sound like broken records sometimes, being like, is this our first PWR win? Is this going to be our first PWR win? But, you know, there's always going to be the opportunity for a scalp, and we're always going to be dangerous. And, you know, there's always the chance that a team like Sale potentially underestimate us, and then we can use that to our advantage. So that's always going to be a possibility in getting our first win of the season. So yeah, I definitely don't think it's outside the realms of possibility. They had a really good win at home against Harlequins this season, but they've probably struggled a little bit since then. They weren't helped by a couple of cancellations. So I think they've played, not cancellations, but the fixtures that are postponed. I believe it was their fixture against Gloucester Hartbury that was postponed because of an ambulance no-show, and then they had a home game cancelled against Exeter because of a frozen pitch. So, you know, that's potentially disrupted their season. They've got to play those games later on this season. So that also kind of contextualises why Sale only one spot above us in the table. So, yeah, I definitely think there's plenty of cause for optimism. There's plenty of... I think it's definitely going to be another high-scoring game. Sale have been pretty good in parts at scoring high points. I think another thing to refer to is that they didn't really get anything past Saracens. I think they got maybe one score, maybe a penalty. Saracens put on a similar score as to what they put on us. But then obviously, if you remember, we were able to get... we scored a lot more tries in that game. We scored about three tries, I think, if I'm not mistaken. So
yeah, well, I've got Sales while you were running through stuff. I've pulled up their results because I'd forgotten that they were really hard done by earlier on a couple of weeks ago by those kind of repeat postponements. So I'll run you through their fixtures. There's a couple I think you'll want to talk about, and because it gives us a lot of hope, because we played really well against two teams, and there's some really interesting results when those teams have played Sale. So, first game of Sale Sharks season, they played Bristol Bears away. They lost 48-5. Then, and this is where it starts to get interesting, they hosted Quins. They won 35-31. So a very close game. Then, and this is the other second kind of interesting fixture for me, they hosted Loughborough Lightning and lost 12-24. Now, those are two teams that we could have won those games.
Yeah.
could have won those games. And then they went away to Trailfinders. They lost that 24 points to 22. That was a really close game. And like you referred to, for the Saracens game, they hosted Saracens and they lost that 69 points to 3. But for me, it's the Quinns Lightning results there that give an indication this could, yeah, you're right, be a really close game. Could go either way because they did lose to Loughborough, but then they beat Quinns. So, but I think we're in with a real, real chance here, just remembering how we performed against Loughborough and Quinns.
Yeah, I agree. I think also in those results you've highlighted there, Jess, is that I think there is a case that Sale perhaps have been struggling a little bit defensively. You know, there's a lot of, you know, even in those games that they won against Harlequins, they shipped 31 points. You know, they shipped a hell of a lot of points against Saracens. They conceded 24 points to Trailfinders, 48 points to Bristol Bears women, and 50 points the week before, or a couple of weeks before, sorry, when they played Bristol previously in the Alliance Cup. So I definitely think that there's, and obviously we've been seeing that we've been scoring these amazing tries. We're continuing to score tries through the forwards. Our two tries scorers again from the Bristol Bears weekend were again Talia Brodie and Ellis Martin. So those two are particularly really benefiting from the work that our forward pack is putting in. So yeah, there's absolutely an opportunity to score a lot of points. And you know, we're thinking about building, and it might be that we do get our first PWR win of the season, but then if it's another close game, but we've got another 2 points from a try scoring bonus point and a losing bonus point, that's still progress, and that's still a good result against a team that are of a similar level to us. So you know, I'm trying to be a bit more level-headed than perhaps I was last week when we predicted that we might get a scalp against Bristol. But again, like, you know, in the Bristol game, when we went through it, there were moments when it easily could have gone either way, and the scoreline was perhaps not so representative of our performance in that game, and I think flattered Bristol ever so slightly. So you know, that there's always going to be an opportunity. Like I said, you know, Sale could underestimate us. I think that there's always the possibility of that. And yeah, as long as I think if we focus on what we've been doing well this season, which is scoring really good tries off set piece and scoring tries through our rolling ball set piece as well, the opportunity there is more than realistic.
Yeah, I agree. I think we just need to continue fronting up in defence. Scrum, we've spoken about, if we can get that sorted, because when we do get quick ball out the back, we've seen in a couple of opportunities how well we've been able to attack off our own scrum. Mm-hmm. Even though it might have been going backwards, we've been able to have some beautiful passes from Tash, from Magic Meg, out to the wing. I think there was one that was nominated for Try of the Week where that link happened. So yeah, I think keep trying to work for the space out wide, keep scoring off the rolling mauls, and continue to front up defensively, and continuing the positives from the Bristol game, keep that penalty count low.
Yeah.
Below 10 shows we're really improving on that. You know, I don't, going up to highs of sort of 13 penalties probably means Sale will win, but in such a close game.
Yeah, and I think something that I was when I was watching the Bristol Bears game back on the match replay, I think you know, our line out and our set piece is very good. There are still moments when it's switching off ever so slightly. I think when Ellis Martin came off, there was a drop off a little bit, and that sort of cost us a few opportunities. But if that continues to be an improvement, as well as continues being a weapon for us, we should really be using to exploit that more. You know, could we be trying to get on top of Sale in the kicking battle? Could we be trying to pin them back in their 22, so they're kicking it to touch, giving us more opportunities to maul or use our line out? Or, you know, could we be looking to get some 50-22s? You know, this is where potentially having the signing of Claire Gallagher, the Canadian fly half, I think could really potentially add another string to our bow, because she's got that experience of playing that kind of rugby at the highest level for Canada. So, yeah, it'll be certainly interesting to see what kind of team that Vicky McQueen names and as to how we get on this weekend.
Yeah, so in line with that, I'm saying it's, I feel like a broken record for my score prediction, but I'm going back to that result where Sail Sharks played Quins, was it? And it was, yeah, it was Quins, and it was within 4 points. I'm saying it's going to be a similar margin to that.
I agree. I think it will be.
Like, I wouldn't be surprised if I almost see a like-for-like 35-31 scoreline appear. I wouldn't be surprised at all. I think it's going to be within four. And I'm going to back us away from home. Absolutely. I'll back us on any day. But we've been playing really well. We've made solid improvements. I think it's going to be close this time. And if we don't win this time, when we welcome them to Matthew Lee Welford Road for the return fixture, it will be a win.
Yes. Sure. I agree. No, I agree. I think it'll be a similar scoreline. And whilst I want to make it very, very clear that I think it's a real shame for Sail fans that they, you know, that they're going to have to choose between La Rochelle and the women's fixture. Obviously, you know, it's really hard with double headers when we're with something like the Champions Cup. It's not just TNT, it's also the French TV organisers, it's also RTE for Ireland. You know, it's they have a very set sort of match schedule, and people have got to work around that. And unfortunately, I'm sure Sail did their best, but this is just the case. And whilst we want to really iterate that that's really disappointing for Sale, that's still something that cynically Leicester can kind of take advantage of at the weekend, and maybe, you know, with make the most of that perhaps being a bit more of a neutral ground than perhaps what it would have been under any other circumstances. And in a close scoring game, that could work really well for us. So, you know, I definitely think it'll be a similar result to that Quins game, and hopefully this time it'll go in the way team's favour. So, yeah, hell, let's go for it. Let's go Tigers by four.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm joining you at that party. Tigers by four. Yeah. Yeah.
So it'll be that the game is on Sunday, 21st, this Sunday, 2 p.m. at Haywood Road. So if there's anyone in the local area that is making the game, you know, do your best, shout your heart out to cheer on our girls. Unfortunately, the game won't be televised on TNT this weekend, which again is another shame. So, hopefully that the highlights package from PWR will be a bit more comprehensive than the Quins one. But we can just cross our fingers at that one. But yeah, if you are making it down to Haywood Road to cheer on the girls, have a great time. Another reminder, there is top Tiger time for the game as well. So if there's any kind of moment, and yeah, I'm sure if we do get our first win of the season, there'll be a lot to say for top Tiger time as well. So best of luck to the girls this weekend. And yeah, hopefully we can get a real result away at Sale.
Yeah, so that is it for this week's pod. As Jacob said, please do continue to reach out with your top Tiger time. You don't have to be in the crowd watching it to get your top Tiger time. If you've noticed a clip a couple of weeks later on social, or a couple of days later on social media, and you want to send that in as your top Tiger time, please do feel free to do so. If not, keep engaging with us. Keep sending in messages. Because anyone that's listening now and tuning in and supporting the women's team can say that they were here from year zero, from year one of the Leicester Tigers women's team, first ever season in top flight competition for women's rugby in this country, maybe the best domestic women's competition in the world. You can say that you were here cheering them on from the very start, so that when they lift that trophy in a few seasons' time, you can say you were supporting them all the way through from the very start, from the bitter rain of that doubleheader where I don't think my toes have warmed up yet for, for that doubleheader game. You can say that you were supporting them from the very start. So let's keep cheering them on, supporting them and giving them our all.